Throughout American history, access to the ballot has been a dynamically controversial issue. When the nation was founded, voting was limited to white landowners. Efforts to expand the right to vote over the centuries were often met with resistance. And even after the 15th, 19th, and 26th Amendment removed federal restrictions based on race, color, previous condition of servitude, and sex, and reduced the legal age to 18, many communities still face barriers to voting. Aside from voting rights secured through constitutional amendments, the federal government currently exhibits little power over elections. The power to manage and administer elections belongs to the states, and it's where some barriers can still be found. To examine the history of voting laws and practices designed to create roadblocks to the ballot, Christy Wheeler, co-president of the Mississippi League of Women Voters, begins with women voters.
It's kind of a sad tale. The history of women voters in Mississippi deals with white supremacy and segregation, unfortunately. And as a result of that, women, white women, were given the right to vote under the 19th Amendment, but Black women were not, even though they were very, very active in the movement to give women the right to vote.
What about Native Americans?
Native Americans have kind of gotten lost, I think, in the white supremacy, Confederacy, slavery issue. And yet Native Americans and also other minorities, Asians, for example, have gotten really hard times and were treated with a great deal of prejudice during the 1800s and 1900s. And today, obviously, with the problems with the Asian population, American Asian population, with the harassment that they're seeing, they're all barriers to those people being able to access the polling booth. One of the things that Mississippi did well with the voter identification was that they accepted Native American ID cards, which is not done in a lot of states. So that was a benefit to that.
All right, let's talk about the African American community. We know about poll taxes and literacy tests. Those are obviously big barriers. Give us the history. When did that start in terms of discouraging African Americans from voting?
Well, it actually started after Reconstruction, so that as the whites began to gain power again, they put in provisions that would keep Blacks, African Americans, from being able to vote. And that's poll taxes and literacy tests. They started in the 1800s and late 1800s, and then went on through the 1900s until the Civil Rights Act. And that's when we finally got some traction for African Americans to be able to vote.
Did it stop cold with the Civil Rights Act?
Oh, my gosh, no. not at all. It's like saying that discrimination has gone away, racism has gone away. No, that did not happen at all. Many people would like to believe that that was the case. Hey, we passed the Civil Rights Act. Everything must be fine now. But that is not the case at all. There are still lots of barriers. The initiative for voter ID, for example, falls heavily on the African American and poor communities because they don't have birth certificates necessarily. I think it's a shame. I understand why conservatives want to have verification of citizenship. I understand that. But if they were really serious about giving greater access to every eligible voter, they would have gone out and given ID cards to everybody. They would have made a huge push to make sure that everyone had a voter ID card. They didn't do that.
Election security is raised as the reason why there isn't mail-in voting or early voting. Yet this last election in 2020, the general election, was secure, was the securest election on record, according to many. Where's the fine line? I assume it's a fine line between having safeguards in the election process versus barriers.
And that's not an easy line to define. However, If you look at what we're doing, as you said, this is the safest election we've had. So part of it is based on this and misconception, untruth, that mail-in voting is somehow open to fraud. And yet there is no documentation that that is the case. So trying to find the way that we can protect voters, we have to identify what are real problems and what are not real problems. And the fraud issue is not a real problem. I think that we've got good systems in place to protect the security of our elections. We don't need more restrictions. We don't need more laws that would throw people off the voter rolls. And that's an issue in Mississippi. We should all want to have the greatest possible access for the most people to be able to go to the polls. That's what democracy is really about. Not shutting it down, not closing it off, opening it up to everyone.
Well, Georgia certainly set off a powder keg with its recent rules, laws, about voting. The controversy that has erupted because of that, what seems to divide this country even more. Is this an ongoing, do you see this as an ongoing problem, or will it be resolved in some way because of those who have stood up to oppose what's happening in Georgia?
I think that it's an ongoing problem. We had exactly the same issues in Mississippi. We had many voter restrictive laws that were in committee. I have to give full credit to our legislature. Although we had some bills to that would expand voting rights, they were all killed in committee, but all the negative bills were also killed in committee. So that was a good thing for the state of Mississippi. We did not pursue into law any of these restrictive laws. The whole idea of the restrictions, I think that they will have some impact, but they will have some blowback also. So I think this is an ongoing problem that we have to deal with the underlying problem, which is racism. And until we deal with that problem, then we're not going to be able to move forward. And this is a big problem for Mississippi because we have so many people who are brought up in the theory that the Confederacy was a good thing. We educate our children that way. And I don't mean just at home. We do it in our schools also. We're not honest about what slavery meant and the aftermath of slavery and the aftermath of the civil rights movement. We're not accurate about those. We just gloss them over. We've got to do a better job. We've got to do a better job with civics education and teaching people about how our government works. We can do a better job, and that's what we need to be doing. And that's one of the things that the League of Women Voters is focused on.
Chrissy Wheeler is the co-president of the League of Women Voters in Mississippi. I thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Federal legislation that would standardize some voting practices and procedures and expand access to the ballot is meeting resistance on Capitol Hill. The bill would expand universal mail-in voting as well as early voting. It would also seek ways to streamline the registration process. Last month, during an interview with WLOX, Secretary of State Michael Watson expressed discontent with the federal efforts to eliminate barriers.
I don't know that a Republican could ever win another national election. And Dave, one thing that has slipped by and some folks really haven't noticed, there was an executive order that came out about 2.5 weeks ago dealing with voter registration, basically employing all the federal agencies, universities, and colleges to register as many folks as they can via this automatic voter registration. So you think about on the coast, we have a hurricane, FEMA comes in and we get FEMA help. On that FEMA application now is going to be an area for voter registration, and it's automatic voter registration unless you opt out. So think about all these woke college university students now who will automatically be registered to vote. Whether they wanted to or not, again, if they didn't know to opt out, they're going to be automatically registered to vote. And then they receive this mail-in ballot that they didn't even probably know was coming because they didn't know they registered to vote. You got an uninformed citizen who may not be prepared and ready to vote. Automatically, it's forced on them. Hey, go make a choice, and our country's going to pay for those choices.
Watson's comments gained national attention last week. Watson later told WLOX he probably could have found a better way to word his thoughts about automatic registration. For those leaving prison, the weight of a felony conviction can also impede the ability to participate in the democratic process. Certain crimes carry disenfranchisement penalties, but other obstacles also hinder ex-inmates when it comes to voting. Pauline Rogers is with the REC Foundation. She says the requirements for registration are often barriers for those re-entering their communities.
It can be housing. Some of them don't have stable address. You have to have an address. Some of the barriers that some of them face would also be identification, where they may not have their license or a proper ID in order to go vote. And some of those people that get out of prisons here in Mississippi are not all from Mississippi, but caught their case while in Mississippi. And unless they have all of their documents to make them be a citizen in the state of Mississippi, that's a barrier, even if they are eligible to vote once they get out.
How can
there are some barriers.
How can REACH help them in that regard?
Well, we try to keep them educated with the 26 crimes, the felony offenses that prohibits them from voting, and we try to assist everyone. We house women. We have reentry housing that we house women, so we are able to work with them more intimately and closely, but men come to us as well. Some of them even living in other transitional homes here in the state and out of the state. So we try to help them get their identification and get their birth certificate and social security card in order to be able to start the process.
Are those who exit prison, or how many would you say that you come in contact with, are interested in voting and having that voice?
A lot of them are interested in voting. However, I have encountered a lot of the people that got out when I got out of prison over 30-some years ago are more apt to staying in the closet. Staying in the closet meaning they're not really wanting to be frontline advocates because they have stable jobs, they have stable housing, and, you know, stable in their churches or whatever in the community, and they're not wanting to upset that with digging up their past because of the perpetual punishment and the perpetual way you are viewed with a felony conviction in this state, and of course not just Mississippi, but all over. So a lot of them are not wanting to come out the closet for that reason.
They don't want to rock the boat.
They don't want to rock the boat because 30-some years ago, this was not a topic on the forefront. And now that it is, those people that have been stabilized from years ago are not wanting to upset that. And I understand it.